little laughter here at The Elaborators. My name is Justin. I'll be your host for today for this season of Elaborating. We've been talking a little bit about the purpose of pain. So last week we talked to Stan Ritchie and DeChan, who are part of the team here at WBC, Werribee Baptist Church. For all those listening from far and away, you can check us out on the socials and on the webs. But we decided that it would be a good enough conversation to keep going. So we thought for that very purpose, we'd invite into the studio Deanna Ritchie.
Woo!
That was good. You were almost convinced that it was exciting. Yeah. it's pretty exciting, isn't it? I don't know.
Why not?
Many elaborators have you done?
Oh, is this three?
Is it? I don't know.
I don't know.
You're the one with the diary.
I get to check the notches on my belt.
Don't you? You're not much of a diary. Are you a diary keeper?
Yeah.
So I don't know. As you know, I'm highly, highly, I love an Excel spreadsheet myself.
Yeah?
Yeah, no.
I was going to say, do you really? Because I'm thinking, I did not know this about you.
No, I can open Excel on my computer. That's about it.
Yeah.
And there have been seasons where, you know, as life does to you, sometimes you're forced into corners where you just got to use things.
You got to do what you got to do.
And I did. There was a season in my life where I knew how to, you know, make the cells equal different cells and like join them together and do all that. So I could even color code cells.
And you did it once and then you never remembered how to do it again.
And then I found a teenager who was better at it than me.
True.
And just moved on from there. Last week on the podcast, we had Stan in, your other half, and we talked about purpose in pain, which was actually came out of a sermon that he preached. Mm. And we were sitting there doing the app and chatting through, and he said, you know who should talk about this? Deanna. And so we thought we'd invite you in and just have a part two conversation about purpose in pain. Just to remind people, you are someone who has done work literally around the world. You've actually worked with teams from around the world, from your little home office here in the city of Wyndham. And you've worked particularly with people, we call it on the field, who are missionaries. Mm. You work quite particularly in the area of burnout. Is that correct?
My goal was prevention of burnout.
Prevention.
So it was putting lifestyle or ministry style practices in place and a monitoring system in place to prevent things like burnout, which is impossible sometimes with some people. But
sure. Well, including ourselves, right? That's kind of the point. So,
but to know what the signs or the things that contribute to burnout was the big thing.
So in your research, we just jump right in the deep end straight away. What were some of the key things that people could pay attention to right now?
Well, I mean, the basic thing that everybody should do is lifestyle monitoring. So on your five basic areas of wellness, you would be looking at your relational wellness and your mental health, your physical wellness and things like that. So eating and sleeping and exercising and keeping your spiritual practices in place. And then that second ripple out is when the relationships start to get a little bit fuzzy. And that would be your family relationships, but also your team relationships and stuff like that, or your relationships with locals would be evidence that maybe some of those normalizing self-care stuff isn't in place, because then it's starting to show the ripples. But then also trauma, because, you know, that's one of those things that happens in life. Trauma comes. It's unexpected. The research that I did was specifically about the what results trauma results happen when people had a diagnosis on the field, either before or after, and how that impacted them and some of the grief.
Sorry, a health diagnosis, a physical health diagnosis you're talking about, or a mental health diagnosis?
Well, it would be any of those things.
Okay, right.
I specifically studied autism spectrum disorders or neuroprocessing disorders, and the impact of having a child with a diagnosis that happened, and the fallout from that. What was the impact?
So in that particular case, we'd be talking about the parents would be the missionaries in this case.
Yes.
And we're talking about their children, so they're in a second culture, far from home, that sort of thing. And what are the impacts once the adult and the child find out about the diagnosis?
Yeah, and that way, because in my field of member care, then we would need to know, well, that's the impact. So then how do we come alongside them to put safeguards in place or to journey with them through that process?
So there's kind of two things you've said there. One of them is about preventative care. And obviously, when it comes to autism spectrum, that's not a thing you can prevent. That's a different type of conversation. So you've also talked about the impact of natural naturally occurring challenges in people's lives. Yeah. So for you, what triggered the desire to even study that in the first place?
Well, when you send people overseas, you're sending them into challenging places, generally speaking. So automatically, living cross-culturally puts people at a higher stress threshold. Mm. So anybody we send, no matter where they're from, they're automatic. We know they're off the charts as far as stress. So, and unchecked stress is what leads to burnout. And that's why self-care is such an important thing. So all of that to say, but then you add in, well, they're faced with poverty all the time, or they're faced with, violence. I can't tell you the number of workers I walked through with violent, like they had a home break-in where the children were threatened with machetes and things like that that happen. Yeah.
Very, very extreme things that are way out of any context that you would experience
it can happen here. It could be a car accident something like here, or violent crime and things like that. But it's more rife in some places and stuff. So people are automatically at risk, and we know that. And certain places are higher risk than other places. So those types of things. But even just walking down the street and being a minority can put a stress on a family.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're going into a place where they stand out and they never have privacy and everybody wants to touch them and stuff, so they have no personal space, can add a layer of stress.
So you're talking about the physical, the emotional, and of course the spiritual in all of that. I've actually decided, I thought it would be cool to actually have another guest into the podcast today. So I should actually, have you actually met our guest?
I think I have.
You have? Yeah.
I haven't gotten to know him really good, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the pod for the second time. I thought it'd be great to have you as a return guest to Chad Cameron.
Hello again. Hello.
It's lovely to have you with us, my friend. I know now, I thought it was a good juncture to bring you in. For those who haven't met Chan, he's new to our team here at WBC in the city of Wyndham and looking after our youth and young adults crew here. But of course, look, probably by the sound of your voice and the tone of your skin and all those kind of things, it should be fairly obvious that the three of us are from different parts of the world. What part of the world are you from?
I'm from South Korea.
And what's when you think about yourself culturally, you are South Korean. That's where you spent your first 20 years?
Yeah, a couple of years. Only a couple of years. I moved around here and there. So
yeah. So you grew up in South Korea?
I was born in South Korea.
Yep.
I lived there until 5 years old and then moved around to England, China, Israel, Australia, all over the place.
And you went back to South Korea to serve
in between,
to do your army service.
Yep.
What was your parents' profession that moved them around the world like that?
So my father is a pastor and his main job is a professor of New Testament at university.
So for you, I assume you're moving largely through Christian cultures.
That's right.
So not necessarily the shock that Deanna was talking about, we're talking very much about moving into areas where maybe Christianity, first of all, isn't accepted and sometimes illegal, and often developing nations and things like that where violence is a bit more rife, tribal warfare, those sort of things have impacted people she's worked with. Do you connect though with some of the conversation about being a second culture child and that culture shock?
I do. Everywhere I went, it was very new to me. New school, new people. Where do I belong? Who am I? Am I Korean? Am I English? Am I Israeli? Wow. What's going on? What's the trend?
Right.
But then the only sense of belonging I had was in church.
Wow.
Yeah. Church was my home place.
So when you found yourself, through no fault of your own, your parents were moving, you're just a child that's been tagged along, which is part of what Deanna was talking about with the children of missionary kids. You're being tagged along. Do you remember the feeling? Did you like finding new places or was it a point of stress and pain?
It was stress, painful. It was quite scary, actually, as a young kid. Am I going to make new friends? What's going to happen to me? Am I going to belong here? Am I going to succeed, with my studies? What am I going to do?
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have an older sister. She's 3 years older than me.
And you were traveling together. So
yep.
Do you remember, did she, you've probably shared as adults, did she experience it differently to you or was it very similar?
It was the same with me, sense of belonging. It was always hard. So I tried to do sports, things like that, tried to belong with friends, but it was hard in the beginning.
Was your sister a person of comfort for you? Do you remember as a?
Yep, she was a great support for me. Always talked to my sister, asked for help with homework, and what you do with your friends. How it can belong with others as well.
And did you find yourself naturally trying to find other South Korean people where you went?
Good question. I didn't have any South Korean friends at school.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing was, in the morning I went to English church, mm-hmm. and in the afternoon I went to a Korean church.
Oh.
Which was quite interesting.
So you just said before that you found a place of belonging in the church, and that was a place of comfort. And, you know, obviously you start to develop even community groups out of that, potentially in Boys Brigade and other things that yep. I know that you were part of. But do you remember a difference between the feeling of community in the English-speaking church and the South Korean church?
The language was obviously different,
yes.
But a sense of welcome and loving care, that was the same.
Not
to correct you, Justin.
What did I
you
do?
Said no. You said second culture kid. It's actually known as an identity of a third culture kid.
Third culture kid.
Which
explain
is,
that for me.
In a nutshell, it's a someone who has grown up in their key developmental time, their younger years, in a culture that's different. Their parents come from one culture, they're living in another culture, and they form what's known as a third culture.
Oh.
So their cultural identity is very fluid and complicated, and they really connect better with other third culture kids, so people that understand that lack of sense of clear identity.
So is there a term second culture, or did I just make that up? Okay, I pulled that one out of the air. So third culture kid, and so are you a third culture adult?
It doesn't quite work that way because I've already fully developed. So I'm sorry, I'm an American.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I'm just proud of you for being fully developed. I think that's...
No, but my kids, I've raised four
yes.
third culture kids. And
because your kids were all born in the US or...?
They were all born in the US.
Yep.
They're all citizens of Australia. So they have mm-hmm. dual citizenship. They're married to Australians. They're raising hybrid children.
Hybrid children.
And
they're electric and petrol. No.
But it's a real thing. And I was really excited to hear Dachan say that because we'll spend some time together and I've got all kinds of, I'm this is what I do. This is what I love.
Yeah. And that's, and again, that's why I thought it'd be lovely to have the two of you on the Elaborators together, because obviously there's a shared interest and a shared fascination, but in our city here, Dachan, I know you've looked at the stats. Do you happen to know how many cultures are represented around you?
Oh, I think at least 40, 50.
Yeah.
I've got neighbors right next to me who's from Pakistan, from India, from Serbia.
Wow.
So
yeah.
All from different places.
Is there a Christmas street party at your place? With
I should have one.
I was going to say, we did it pre-pandemic, we did it, where we'd set up tables out the front of the house and have, because we've got, we've got Argentinian neighbors, it's jumping out of my head. We had Polish neighbors, Argentinian neighbors, Italian, a couple of African nations represented as well. I must say to all my African mates, I don't mind the way you guys cook the goat, but seriously, get an Argentinian friend and have an Argentinian barbecue, because that will blow you out of the water. But
it's all about the food for you, isn't it? It is. It is.
Well, again, these are the things you discover as an adult. Is that I was as I've gotten to know Dachan as well. I was saying, you know, let's get together for food. And my friend Justin then said to me, "That's all you ever do. You just tell people to get together for food." Because I do. I love because music, like food, has a poetry to it. Has a sensory thing to it. You know, anything deep fried will connect the world. That's my theory. Is if enough of us get together, if the UN had a chicken fryer in the middle of that sucker, that meeting would go so much better, wouldn't it? Don't you think?
Could be.
Deep fried, and look, deep fried anything, the vegetarians can have the tofu, it's all good. You just deep fry it and the world comes together. Anyway, there's my plan for peace around the world, including prayer. So as a third culture kid then, What's your hope as you look around there? Because it probably feels a little bit like when you're in the city, you're in Australia, but you could be anywhere in the world some days of the week, don't you find?
Yeah. But when I'm in Melbourne, I feel very privileged because I don't have to go all over the world to see everyone. But everyone is here in Melbourne, so what a great privilege. And like eating food as well, that's what I do with my neighbors. Pakistani food, Indian food, we share, and there's some great food there as well. Like even with chicken, it's the same chicken, but they
prepared so many different ways.
So many different ways.
Kentucky fried for me.
Kentucky fried.
Indiana fried, actually, but anyway.
Indiana fried, tell me the difference.
Oh, no, because Indiana is the northern border of Kentucky. So, anyways.
Okay, is that like a,
it's a joke.
It's a joke. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for all those who missed it, that was a joke. What was the joke?
No joke.
Never mind. Okay, so I'm sorry. I don't have enough cultural context to get the joke.
I have a very good joke.
Yeah, go.
There's a joke that says, East or the West, food is the best.
No, done. You win. Now, we've been talking about purpose in pain, and obviously some of it has we've focused a little bit in your work, Deanna, on working with people who are experiencing is culture shock a broad enough term
what they're experiencing? No, it's high levels of stress. And I think that when you talk about high levels of stress, it's not just unique to cross-cultural workers. It's, I mean, any people helping like relief and development type people, firemen, policemen, they have a higher tendency toward experiencing high levels of stress that's incapacitating or leads to burnout. Suicide rates tend to be higher, things like that.
Just so we're clear, burnout, what are the, is there a clinical explanation for what burnout is? As opposed to I'm feeling tired, is there something you could give us as far as burnout is you have no capacity left?
Yeah, it's unmitigated stress for a prolonged period of time. And what that means is, so stress management's key in prevention, but when people are exposed to prolonged stress, so you might have a traumatic event, and yes, there's stress, and there's a saying that stress has a tail. It's if that's not managed, so the outpouring, because when we experience stress, we pour out from ourselves, from our capacity.
Yeah.
It reduces the capacity, and then when the capacity gets so low, you add one more thing, and you just don't have the capacity in order to deal with it. Now, in Christ, obviously, he is our strength and our sufficiency and all those things. And yes, we need to tap into that as Christians, but we're still human too. And see, I think that's what sometimes we forget as Christians is like, yes, Christians can burn out because we're still human, because life... Well, it's the stuff that God allows. Job, I wouldn't want to walk in Job's shoes.
I think oftentimes, even to have to use the statement, we're still human. I mean, how much ego is there in believing that because you have a faith, you're more than human? I mean, it's the most ridiculous sort of egotistical thing. We do have a help that we can go to. But the thing that I keep taking from Jesus' life is he did a lot of walking and talking.
He did.
There was a lot of going up mountains and praying. There was a lot of going to a private place. There was a lot of those things. And for each sort of out giving out, there was an equal and opposite retreating.
Even more than the retreating. Reviving. The thing about his friends, you know, he's like, can't you watch with me for an hour? We need that social support. That's known as a good insulator against things like burnout and stuff like that. Having those people in our lives and around us that can help support us through hard times, but also pray with us, for us, and just feel that sense of we're not isolated, because it's in that isolated experience of stress can lead to burnout as well.
The isolated experience of stress. Yes, because again, we've got to be human is to feel pain, is to feel stress, is to feel anxiety. That's just human. But to feel it alone, that we were not built to deal with that, were we at all?
No, and I think that's what, you know, tapping into what Deshaun. I'll get it right. You'll have to educate us and be patient with us. But saying that, you know, when he would move around, he found community in church because that was the consistent in his life, his family, and then, you know, church in addition to that, rather than necessarily normal social supports that we would expect, you know, if you've lived in the same place forever.
Tachan, coming from a background where your father quite literally taught the New Testament to people, did faith come easily to you, or is it something that obviously it's taught at an academic level by your father, but that doesn't make it a personal faith experience? What was it that sort of led you into that deeper relationship with your faith?
Yeah, so my dad was very academic, I would say, but one day he came over to the house and he was saying, "Tachan, kneel down." I was like, "Why?"
My dad said, I was like, "Am I getting a smack for something?
Am I in trouble?"
Yeah, it sounds like it.
And then he knelt down right next to me and he said, "Just lift up your hands." "Okay, Dad, this is really strange. This is weird. You don't usually do this." And he said, "Just cry out the name of Jesus." And he said, "You're going to receive the Holy Spirit." And from being an academic to receiving the experience of the Holy Spirit, that really changed his life. And that changed my life as well.
I love that. I love that. Yes. And I have heard that experience before from people who are largely academic. That's the way they're wired, and that's the way they love to read the text and get deep into the text. And it's not until they have an experience that's other than, that's outside of the locum of control, that says this is the Holy Spirit. Wow. I love that. What was it for you, Dee, that brought you, I guess, closer to that process? Because I know you've been a journaler and that sort of stuff. Was it just a personal moment? Has there been a personal moment that's allowed you to go, I get it now?
Growing up in church and having a very passionate evangelistic type of a mom that was a real prayer warrior and stuff like that, and very, I'll say, lots of rules-oriented stuff, where church and Christianity was shoved down my, can I say it that way?
Shoved down my throat.
And a lack of appreciation for it. When Stan and I married at such a young age, I was 18, and I thought, you know, we'll get away from church. I won't have to go anymore. Mm-hmm. And that absence of that short amount of time, a few months of absence of not being connected into that strong spiritual community for me, made me do business with God. Can I say it that way? And I remember getting down on my knees in our bedroom of our little apartment, our first apartment, and saying, God, if you're real, we need to mean business. And that was the beginning of the heading in the right direction, let's say it that way. I was saved as a kid and stuff like that, but taking it for granted and lack of ownership, I think, was my thing.
I think the ownership part of it, I think even confessing that, you know, somehow my story is one of, you know, I kind of ended up in local church ministry, didn't really mean to. It's just that's where the road led. And certainly that feeling of wondering whether I still get it. And really, I think one of the purposes of pain or stress is to bring us back to that place of reliance. And I know that there's, I don't want to make too much of a theological statement about we have to have it to get there, but there does seem to be a pretty strong correlation. For you, Dechan, I know that when you were 17, you were involved in a fairly heavy motorbike accident where I believe you were physically hit by a motorbike and thrown into the air.
Yep.
What happened there?
That's right. Actually, I wasn't riding the bike. So I was crossing the street and the bike just came from behind, from nowhere, and hit my back.
You're in London?
I was in London.
London, so busy area.
Busy roads.
Busy roads.
Yep, busy road. Yep. I was crossing the street. The motorbike came from nowhere, just hit me. And fortunately, I was turning to my back. So it hit my backpack, which had a large lunchbox.
Mm-hmm.
So I flew in the air, landed on the floor. And then since then, I had back pain, serious back pain. When I was waking up, when I was going to go to bed, when I lay down, I had serious back pain, which is really uncomfortable for a long time.
So this is from the age of 17 to about when?
To university.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. But for you again, that community of faith comes around you and they start praying.
They start praying. The church was involved in praying for me.
Mm.
They were just praying constantly. And amazing thing happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't experience that pain anymore?
No pain anymore.
So there's just a miraculous healing? Yeah,
over 15 years now, no pain.
Wow. I guess there's a number of points in that. Is one, the first thing you did was got back into the church community after getting these kind of traumatic events, you know, accidents that you have no control over at all, don't deserve it, you did nothing to get it, you know, all of that kind of thing of, did I deserve this accident? Did I deserve this pain? And a lot of people mentally end up in that space. Is God trying to punish me or something? But the thing is that it's somehow an accident that literally could have ended your life that brings you closer to God and closer to a community of faith.
It does. It reminds me of the term wounded healer.
Mm.
So the deeper the wound, the deeper the healing, the greater the healing. And so after that, when someone says they're in physical pain, they're going through pain, I have more compassion for them. So I keep on praying for them. Mm. And my heart really just pours out for them.
That's beautiful. The word compassion is one that always piques my interest because it's been a big theme of my life, trying to get better at compassion. Dee, for you, was there? I know there's many things that you've shared with us.
Is
over.
Is that because I'm old? The older I get, the more there are.
Well, I often say to people, again, you're talking about people facing industries and faith communities, leaders in faith communities are in people facing, and often end up in these places simply because their life has led them to feel so deeply for the needs of others, and often through their own pain and their own trauma. Was there something particularly that led you into this space that carries that deep compassion. I know that there's been, I don't know if you've had any of those sort of physical kind of injuries and things like that.
I had congestive heart failure at one point in time.
Yeah, that's got to suck. Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
And that was when Jill was born. And then, you know, obviously later when Jill went through her bone marrow transplant, those were really deepening faith times, because when you realize that your life is not your own, like Deshaun, you know, he could have been killed.
Mm.
And when you face the reality that, wow,
you God have no control me. Over this. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. Yes, there's pain afterwards. I mean, going through the stuff that we went through as a young mom of four, cause Jill was our fourth kid.
So Jill's your fourth daughter. That's the pregnancy where you have the congestive heart failure. And then Jill goes on to have life-threatening illnesses in her later teen years.
Yeah. She was 17 when she had her bone marrow transplant. So, and just journeying, just that, you know, her life, we had already reconciled that her life belonged to God's, obviously, but to God. But it was the journey out of that afterwards. You remember earlier I said that stress has a tail. That journey of recovery, or the painful journey where, you know, for years after the accident, you have to deal with the fallout or the ripple effect of that.
Yeah.
It's a long journey. It's not a 5-minute lesson that we get.
When we talked to Grant Bickerton one of the early episodes of The Elaborators, and go back and check that one out if you haven't heard that one. Grant Bickerton is a counselor in trauma and quite an expert in burnout. His contention was actually a little, it took me back a little, which was his contention was, as long as it took you to get into burnout, it can take you that long to get out of burnout.
Can. It doesn't have to.
Doesn't have to. Doesn't have to. But commonly speaking, it is a long recovery. And so whatever it was that sort of, and so I guess that to me points to that place of, the longer you stay in that place and refuse to acknowledge it or refuse to do anything about it, the longer it's going to take you to get out of that place. And I think that's where, Deshaun, you talked about the wounded healer, you know, the cry out to God moment, the thing that your father taught you, just kneel down and just cry out to God. Again, I point to this thing of prayer is not complex. There's a beautiful simplicity to a humbled heart that just says, God help. I think, and certainly that's been your experience. But I think in both your cases, Dee, there has been that help. You've seen those moments of breakthrough, but you've still carried long tails of stress.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're focusing. I think this is the thing. When you are in the middle of crisis, God's strength is sufficient without a doubt. And I'm not saying that it's not sufficient after. It is certainly sufficient. But, you know, you do what you have to do to survive in those moments.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then you process after.
Right, right.
So it's in that processing time that we start to try to make sense. Well, what was that all about? And what, you know, maybe what did I learn through that painful experience? It's upon the reflection and stuff. And then the healing to rebuild the capacity that was drained away to meet the trauma. I'll say trauma. It's we have what we need for that moment, and we have to build it back up. Because we have good capacity. A trauma happens, it drains away our capacity through the trauma, because traumas usually aren't instantaneous. You know, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And then you have to build it back. So that would be what Grant was talking about as far as long as it took you to come through it.
So when somebody says to you, Dee, the joy of the Lord is your strength, just feel more joy, and you don't slap them for saying that because you've self-controlled. What did you say? You're fully developed now.
And I do believe the joy of the Lord is our strength. But
so what does that mean to you? What does it mean to say the joy of the Lord is your strength? And Deshaun, feel free to chime in here, man. Yeah, I was going to
say, bring it in.
Joy of the Lord. I know it's a painful journey, but the joy of the Lord is that God is with us in that journey together.
Yeah.
He doesn't abandon us. He doesn't leave us behind. Okay, your pain, you do it yourself. No, but he's merciful. He's compassionate. He's with us.
Mm. It doesn't always feel like that in pain, though, does it? Because I'm sure we could all confess that although we read that scripture and believe that as truth, there's probably been plenty of times where, like other people in the Bible itself, said, God, where the heck are you? I'm sure they wouldn't have said, where the heck, right? You can't say that.
Well, you know what? I like to always point out that joy is a fruit of the Spirit.
Good.
It's something that is deeper than our logical minds. We try to put a human slant on this whole concept of joy and stuff like that, but it really is a fruit of the Spirit. It's spiritually produced, so that the more we lean into God, I think, the more he's able. It's that, what is it, walk in the Spirit and you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh, or and it's not that pasted smile all the time, but it's that deep inner peace that even though it is painful and even though it is lasting, that God has purpose in it. I think that's the, that's where I hang my hat anyway, so that this isn't for nothing. God won't waste it. God is doing something. And see, some people will come at that then and say, well, you know, God didn't orchestrate me getting abused or something like that, right? And it's a tough thing that we grapple with, the providence of God, what's known as the providence of God. Yeah. But God, we have to trust that God does allow us to go through these things to develop us, our spiritual muscles, if you will, but realizing that joy is actually a fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah. I think that, you know, in sort of our utopian kind of dreams, there might be a place where everyone's happy all the time, always, and in love would just, and I certainly hear it in, you know, pop music throughout the ages. You know, pop musicians have come up with, let's all just love one another and that'll be fine. Love's the answer. And they're partly true, partly right.
Sure.
But it's a type of love. It's God's love. It's a complete love. It's a love that says, I love you despite your failings. So if one person is a messed up person that God loves, and that messed up person goes and messes up another person, God's love still extends to both people. And I think that injustice is the thing that we're forever trying to wrestle with. It is not fair that Tachan got hit in the back by an oncoming motorbike at the age of 17. That's just not fair. It's not fair that you had to go through congenital heart failure and then your own daughter had to go through a life-threatening illness to need a bone marrow transplant from your son. That's just not fair. But that's not what we're not talking about fair, are we?
Oh, no, not fair. Fair is that thing you fair is that thing you go to with fairy floss and.
So when we're talking about the joy of the Lord and people take it as an anecdote rather than a deep truth, they're probably talking about the part that's not fair, the part that's unjust. So when people are experiencing justice, and it's happening all throughout communities. And we can point to the you know, overseas wars and all sorts of things that are happening that are simply not just. What have you done to deal with those moments where you've said to God, this is not fair?
There's a form of counseling that's where you imagine Jesus is right there in your most painful moment. And the idea is you're to think back and imagine Jesus in that space, and what message does he have for you? I can't remember the name of the counseling that does that, but and you know, somebody asked me that in relation to my painful time, and I said, you know what, he didn't say anything; he was just there beside me.
Wow.
And I think that the presence of God can't be underestimated. Is the value of the presence of God for us as his children is he doesn't have to. And that's, isn't that the thing? When we go through pain, people want to talk because we like to have the answers.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk and stuff like that. And sometimes people say, you know what, just be there. Don't say anything, and people's grief and stuff like that. And I just thought that just, I don't know why I just shared that with you, but that stuck with me, that it's that presence of, you know, that comfort without words, even, that his Spirit brings.
This is Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 8. And it says, although he was a son, talking about Jesus, although he was a son, he learned obedience from what he suffered. And once made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation for all who obey him. It's this phenomenal idea that Jesus, although the Son of God, learnt obedience through suffering. There's actually a coming to God that happens, that you've both spoken about, that certainly is true of my life, of these moments of pain where there were no right answers. Mm. There was no why. There was no you deserved it. There was no who sinned, this man or his parents, you know. There was just these moments where the other side of the testimony is the fruit of the Spirit is still love, peace, patience, joy, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, and self-control. Against such things there are no law. Like, these things are things that are fundamental to the blessing of humanity, I guess. Which is what our lives are, what we're trying to do through things like this podcast, through things like the local church ministries that we do, is trying to just speak that truth to a community that desperately needs it. And so I'm really grateful to both of you for coming in and sharing a little bit today. And hopefully we've all learned a little bit. Have we learned something? Have you learned something today?
That was good to chat. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we should get to the end of these episodes and then go, what were the top three things you learned? Tachan, did you just learn that Dee's got a cool backstory and she learned that you've got a cool backstory?
And Justin can produce.
Oh, yeah. Big shout out to Justin Clark in this case, who's can you stick your face in one of the cameras so that people can see you? This is, he hasn't got a mic, but
yay, hey! There he is.
Producer Simon hasn't been with us. He's been traipsing all over Europe with his family and retracing the steps of his forefathers, I believe, is what they've been doing.
Well, you know, they've been facing some of their own family pain, because that's where...
Don't start a new episode.
Yeah, well, I'm not, but I'm just thinking
you
that...
You are so.
I was talking to them before they left, and that was one of the things that came up, is that it was going to be a bittersweet experience in some ways. Yeah.
Anyway, so I don't...
Sorry.
Dee's just started episode 427 without my permission, but that's okay. Dee, thank you so much for being part of the Elaborators today. And thank you for your background and for all of the research and all of the study and all of the blessing that you bring to our lives and to the people around you.
Make me blush.
Dechan, you're a legend. It's been great getting to know you. Thank you for being on two episodes of the Elaborators in a row.
Very happy to be.
Could you just say something to us in Hebrew?
Late flowered. See you later.
That'll probably do for now. But yeah, if you need any Hebrew lessons, Dechan's on your side. If you need any lessons in the difference between Kentucky and
Indiana,
Deanna can help you out. And I've got nothing for you. So, to all the elaborators out there listening, thank you for listening. Share with your friends, and we'll catch you next time.